Management.com. From The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, thecooperageproject.org. And from listeners like you.
Welcome to the Local Edition News and Information to keep you connected in the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. And tonight we conclude the series of voter education workshops that the NAACP of Sullivan County put on in conjunction with the Ethelbert B. Crawford Public Library in Monticello. We've been airing in the past few weeks. And we've got our final speaker and just a little bit of the Q&A to follow. But first, we also have election-related news out of Albany today that we need to get to. And, of course, all of this is happening because next Tuesday is primary day in New York State. And there are new protections in place for voters in New York. Governor Kathy Hochul signed the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Act into law today. Speaking at Medgar Evers College in Brooklyn, Hochul highlighted the civil rights work of both civil rights leaders Lewis and Evers.
As Medgar Evers knew, there's so many fights to be had, and one of them is protecting the right to vote, because our democracy only works if everyone who's eligible can participate in it.
So this bill that was signed into law today targets voter discrimination, adds enhanced legal protections for voters, and centralizes election data in New York. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins said she hopes New York's legislation inspires the passage of other voting rights bills around the country.
Let us continue to be a model, to be an example, to be relentless, fearless, and tireless, because in New York, we lead.
And thank you to New York State Public Radio for that reporting. This is the Local Edition. We're going to now continue with our conclusion of the voter rights workshops that were held in Monticello by the Sullivan County chapter of the NAACP. That just happened last month. And we're going to continue now with the second speaker from the second workshop that was held. And your host for this is president of the NAACP in Sullivan County, Sandra Johnson Fields.
Welcome our presenters, Barbara Schmidt and Brandon Holmes, and we appreciate them being here. Brandon Holmes is from the New York Civil Liberties Union. He is a former New York campaigns coordinator at JLUSA, where he managed the hashtag CLOS Erickers campaign. And thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you, Barb. Great, you know, way to let people know there's clear ways to take action and clear folks in your community, your neighbors, such as Barb, who have been doing this work for years and want to get more on folks involved. I want to, you know, start my comments kind of sharing a little bit about myself and grounding, you know, kind of my role in this work and what I'm prioritizing, you know, with my involvement here. So I am Brandon Holmes. I am born and raised in the Hudson Valley. I grew up in Orange County. My mother has been a public school teacher in Rockland County for the past 15 years or so. And I've really seen how voting, both, you know, in primaries and local elections, general elections, but also in the elections that get less turnout, that don't have as much attention or voter education or outreach done, such as school board elections, how that can impact folks, especially, you know, me coming from a family of public school teachers, and seeing the role that those school board elections, which are not governed by the local board of elections, but are a separate entity all in their own, have really, you know, led to disparate impacts on targeted communities, or have kind of created this culture environment of where people say, you know, people are just not showing up to the polls. People only care when the president's being elected, right? And I think that is also a little bit damaging to us as, you know, advocates and concerned citizens and community members who are trying to think through ways like, why do people not register early enough, right? All the dates are there. We're hosting presentations like this and talking to folks about it. But why are folks not as energized and excited about it as we are? And I think, you know, the first thing I want to kind of touch on in that is just the kind of history and what's recently happened with redistricting in New York. So specifically, the way redistricting is going to impact Sullivan County is that Sullivan County it's always been a very competitive county between Democrats and Republicans. It's been a very bipartisan area. You know, it could be which way the wind blows in any year, but there's a lot of history there. In kind of looking at the way the district maps are drawn and kind of these different processes, such as cracking or packing a district that we see, which is a part of, you know, this culture, this word gerrymandering, right? Gerrymandering just means any type of ways that you change election districts or draw new congressional or state senate or assembly maps that benefits one party over another. But there's more, you know, unique ways and approaches and ways that we see this is kind of happening throughout the state. So on one hand, there's people who argue that there should be no cracking of districts, right? And that means that we should not be separating target populations, right? If we know there's a heavy block of Republican voters in this district, we should not be looking at ways that when we cut the new district maps, that those people are now separated and they no longer have the power that they had as a voting bloc before. Or it could be a community of color and saying that we're going to, you know, this major city, because the population is so high, you know, in a place like Middletown or a place like Poughkeepsie, because the population is so high, we're just going to draw this line straight down the middle. And that's going to split the most, you know, the most predominantly black and brown or low income communities in the area, just based on the way that we've drawn these lines. So that's called cracking, right? So splitting up those voter blocks to say, these people have been voting. And, you know, regardless of whether it's your assembly district, or your Senate district, saying these folks have been voting Democratic or Republican or however for years. And we want to kind of split that up. And if you are able to show that people have intentionally done that, that's a form of gerrymandering. But then there's also packing, which is we are not having, you know, a lot of power in this process and we're losing seats. And now we need to figure out how we reorient these lines following the census so that we can make sure that, you know, all the people who are like-minded, people who want to vote together and who have the same values and beliefs are now on these, you know, drawn into these new maps so that they can be packed together so that they have more power as a voting bloc. And both of those things, believe it or not, are illegal. Packing or cracking a district based on the new maps that you draw are illegal. So you're probably, you know, thinking, well, what is legal when you're changing the maps? Why change the maps if there's so many things that you have to worry about not doing? And a lot of, you know, a lot of those regulations come down from the federal government. But as we look at, you know, what the federal government has done and what the Supreme Court is posed to do on a lot of bold reforms or amendments to the Constitution, such as decisions around Roe v. Wade and abortion access and kind of stripping away some of the protections that the federal government provided, we see other states throughout the country are starting to pass laws around, you know, voter access or requirements, like what is the state or this local city required to facilitate in the election process, right? And what are the challenges that the state or the city will have to respect or just sweep under the rug and say, we don't care about your concerns of voter fraud. We only want to investigate, like, you know, our concerns around voter fraud. And the way that we're seeing policy kind of shape around that conversation in other states lets us know that here in New York, the Empire State, we have to lead the way, right? And we have to identify ways that we're moving the conversation just from, you know, is this gerrymandering because these maps are being redrawn? The maps were redrawn and then a judge ordered that both the Senate and congressional maps be redrawn again by an independent special map master, which happened just last week. So we're talking about a process that is going to happen after the census, and, you know, it's going to keep happening. But how do we pass voter protections and voter access legislation that makes sure that when those lines do change, they're not disenfranchising communities that have been targeted by whoever's in power at that time, whether it be Democrats or Republicans. You know, it's the position of our organization that we believe any maps that would disproportionately impact any individual communities based on race, based on values, religion, anything like that, should be unlawful and should be challenged. And, you know, what we're looking at right now is that after the census, New York lost one congressional seat. So we lost one district. Our old maps had 27 seats. And I actually have a note on the breakdown of that. There were 17 of those districts that voted in strong support of Biden, 5 of those districts that voted in strong support of Trump, and 5 of those districts that were so competitive that you could not really draw them in either way in the 2020 elections. But now with the new maps, we have one less seat. And with the changes that a judge just issued over the new, you know, Senate and congressional maps recently last week, with our new map, 26 seats, we have 16 strong Biden districts. So that's one less. We have 3 strong Trump districts. That's 2 less. But now we have 2 districts that are now, based on the way the new maps are drawn, they are now more competitive. Right. So we were looking at 5 competitive districts, which were red or blue, depending on the year. Now we're looking at 7 districts within New York that are going to be swinging, right? That are could be red, could be blue, depending on who runs a better campaign, who's reaching more voters, who's talking about the issues in that local community. And here in Sullivan County, that is actually what we're talking about. Sullivan County is labeled as one of those purple districts. It is, you know, that area, the region is more competitive. So what we're looking at is your assembly members, they got new maps, right? So you have to check to make sure that the person you voted for assembly, if they're running for reelection, make sure that they're still running to represent your neighborhood, because you might have associated yourself with that name for a long time. And based on the new assembly maps, it could be different depending on where you live. Same with the Senate, but the assembly has kind of, they've had their maps for a while. The governor signed that into law when the first map was drafted, and the judge challenged the congressional maps and the Senate maps. So those are new. Those are the ones that I would really encourage everybody, you know, check on the New York State government website, make sure that you are still voting for the same senator, or if you know, if they're not running for reelection, make sure you're clear on what your district may be, because your number may have changed. An example is, I'm sorry, I don't have a clear example from the Sullivan County maps because I'm still looking, but there is a legislator, Senator Elijah Reichlin Melnick, down in Rockland, and he had part of Westchester County. So with the new Senate maps, he is no longer representing any of Westchester County. So now his new district is entirely Rockland County, and he has expanded further into Rockland County. So what this means for kind of politics as it's been in New York State for the past several months, especially the past several weeks since the budget, if people are concerned, right? Senators and assembly members both are concerned and kind of saying like, well, I'm going to have to run, you know, for a new seat, or I'm going to have to reach a new community, or I'm going to have to, you know, the way you'd hear a lot of them talk, it's as if they're learning a new language, right? That they're like, I need to kind of figure out what my new district looks like and what are the, you know, political challenges or concerns that I need to have around representing this new swath of, you know, an expanded community, right? Or in some cases, a smaller community or just a slightly different community. And then we've seen it in local elections. So, for example, in New York City, and I don't believe this is the case in most of the Hudson Valley, but in New York City, they had to, all of the council members, there's 50 council members and about 85% of them were term limited. So there's 85% of city council is brand new, never been in city council before, just elected in November. And now they have to run again this year. Right. So this is also going to impact your local elections. So if you hear that your local alderman or your local, corporation council, whoever like who represents your city, if you hear that, you know, there are some folks in your city council or whatever, you know, it may be named in your town that have to run for re-election, this is also an opportunity for you to get your needs heard, right? To have your needs met and to have the issues that are important to you heard, especially in a year where we're looking at There's going to be congressional races. There's going to be a governor's race. There's going to be so many elections happening. This is really where we believe that people can really capitalize on the power in, you know, our democratic process and making sure that your voice is heard, that you're getting these issues in front of folks, especially when you might be a new constituent of theirs, right? And maybe you're not familiar with them. So it's an opportunity for you to kind of ground yourself and introduce yourself to them and get to know, you know, a little bit more about what they are prioritizing, and make sure that they are clear that you, as a new constituent of theirs, are clear on what you want and what you expect to see in your community. So the next thing I wanted to talk about before I open it up to Sandra and we go into questions was New York State. I think a lot of times people kind of overlook a lot of the ways that New York State has been guilty of voting rights violations. And I can't go through all of them, but I do want to give you an example that is not too far from home and something that we have been dealing with over the past several weeks. I'm sure folks are familiar with all the school board elections and things that are happening. And as I mentioned before, your local board of elections does not govern school board elections. So when that happens, it is the school board that is determining, okay, are we going to use these polling sites or are we not going to use these polling sites? They don't have to use all of the same polling sites that are available for the general elections. And there's so many local institutions and, you know, small towns and villages and municipalities that are not governed by this, or, you know, do not have oversight from the state looking into their election processes. And this is where we see the most voter disenfranchisement or voter suppression or dilution. When it comes to these local smaller elections, which people often say, you know, like I said, people just don't care as much, right? They're not excited as much. They're not educated as much around this. But when it comes to the president, because there's so much advertising and it's in your face all the time and you only have to do it, you know, once every 4 years, it's easy for people to tune in then. But we see even in midterm years that there's lower voter turnout. And we strongly believe that, you know, our goals have to be broader than just voter education and outreach and connecting with communities, but really figuring out how we focus on improving access and resources to protecting people's right to vote. And when they feel like they've been wronged, you know, as Barb was talking about, when they feel like they're being intimidated at the polls, when they report something or they say something, that there is in a state entity or, you know, some oversight body that is accountable to investigating that and resolving the problem so that doesn't turn people away from returning to the polls. And so that one bad experience doesn't make them think, oh, the whole system is rotten. Why would I even waste my time? Why would I show up? We think that it's important to grapple with those issues and, you know, kind of the cultural conversation of why are people not energized like they used to? Why do we take these rights for granted? But there's also a moment where we have to talk about, like, how do we make it easier for people? Why is it so challenging for folks whose first language isn't English to receive, you know, the right voter accessibility documents or materials they need to make sure that their registration is up to date, to make sure that they're not just going and casting a, you know, a dead ballot, or that they're not getting turned away when they arrive to the polls and someone is saying, like, oh, well, we don't have your record anymore. And, you know, we're not mailing. We, you know, you didn't get anything in the mail. So I'm sorry, I can't help you on the day of.
We're listening to Brandon J. Holmes, Hudson Valley Regional Director of the New York Civil Liberties Union, and he's addressing a workshop that took place last month at the Sullivan County NAACP at the E.B. Crawford Library. His remarks will continue. Also get to a couple of questions on the other end. This is a local edition. We're going to be right back.
Join me, Staff Sergeant Sandberg, for a very special edition of Let's Talk Vets. Dawn Shaw, director of the VA Hudson Valley Healthcare System, will discuss tremendous employment opportunities throughout the Hudson Valley VA. And we'll visit with our friends John Crotty and Steve Walsh at the Sullivan County Veterans Service Agency to dispel some of the most common misconceptions veterans have. Wednesday, 7 p.m. on Radio Catskill, WJFF.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Calicoon Marketplace on Main Street, home to Woolworth Yarn, the Calicoon Pantry, Lit Home and Book, Early Bird Cookery, The Herbal Scoop, Channery Hill Farm, Vintage Maroc, and Grizzly Bagels. From Sullivan Renaissance, a community beautification initiative of the Gary Foundation, dedicated to empowering volunteers to build beautiful, active communities in Sullivan County for over 20 years. On Facebook, Instagram, and at sullivanrenaissance.org. We are Radio Catskill, your NPR station for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.
Okay, let's now return to Brandon J. Holmes addressing the Sullivan County chapter of the NAACP. Mr. Holmes is the Hudson Valley Regional Director of the New York Civil Liberties Union.
You know, one example that I do want to share before I open it back up is we found is, so we're starting to do more of this work throughout the Hudson Valley, but we started down because we had a big case in East Ramapo where we actually sued the school district and along with the NAACP of Rockland County, sued the school district to kind of look at, like, why is it that the schools where predominantly Black and Brown students and low-income students are attending continue to have failed budget votes, but the private schools in the district continue to get more and more of the resources from taxpayer dollars and with the blessing of the school board officials. So we've started to expand our research and we're expanding into Sullivan County, actually starting with Monticello and then expanding from there. So if folks have any recommendations, definitely want to hear that. Any teachers or, you know, school board candidates and folks that you've worked with. But we found that in Clarkstown School District in Rockland County, 44% of the public school students are children of color, and 25% of all eligible voters within that district are people of color. But the entire school board was comprised of 7 white people before this recent election. And NYCLU discovered that there were less than 50% of the number of polling sites for school board elections that were actually open and available in Black and Brown communities in the district. So these same polling sites, say there were 100 polling sites available in a Black community and 100 available in the white communities, they shut down 50 of them, you know, or 51 of them, more than 50% of them were shut down during school board elections. But all of the ones in the white neighborhoods and the wealthier neighborhoods were left fully functional and operational, the same as a general election or a primary election would be. So we kind of had to ask the question to the school board, when did you get to a point in the process of saying we will not use these polling sites? Did the state or the local board of elections tell you, oh, the cost to open those or to staff those, it's too much, and then you had to make a budget decision? Or was it just like an arbitrary choice to say, we only need 120 sites to be open, so let's just, you know, choose these 120 and those other ones, like a lot of people don't show up and vote in the school board elections, so we just won't open them, right? Because imagine if you were in your neighborhood and you went to your regular polling site in 2024 to cast your vote for president, and you got there and they said, they didn't say anything. It was just closed. And no one was there and no one could let you in and you couldn't cast a vote. And you had to wonder, why can't I vote here today? And it's just because someone made an arbitrary decision to say, we didn't expect you to show up to vote, so we didn't create an opportunity for you to vote. We didn't expect you to be here, so you can't vote here. And then often what happens in those situations is folks who are able to, you know, who haven't had to take time off of work or, you know, plan their vote around their regular day, folks who are able to go to another site will then have to kind of bounce around different sites to see, like, well, where can I go? Because at my polling site, it was closed. So if I just go to the next one, you know, or one that I know is available, they might not actually have me on the roll there. Or, you know, maybe I will have to go somewhere else. So we've heard a lot of those stories and a lot of people just saying, you know, once I was turned away, like, or I found out they weren't voting there, I just went to work and I said, you know what, whatever happens, happens. But then we continue to see public schools receive massive amounts of disinvestment. We continue to see arguments break out and violent eruptions happen at school board meetings when parents or teachers are arguing over the curriculum and the content of what their students are learning in school, right? But if people in our communities were actually, we were talking about improving access and protecting their right to vote and feel represented by these bodies, we believe like that's our North Star, right? Not to just say, hey, you've got to register to vote. Hey, this is all the dates that you need to know. And, like, you know, go over here and to the Board of Elections and register, but also to say, like, you know, what is the culture around why people don't vote? or why people think it's just too much of a hassle and it's not worth their time or investment. And how do we pass more, you know, legislation that can address that? So I've got some information on the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which we are looking to pass in New York, which in a sense is to protect the federal protections that are already granted to us. It's to go beyond that and protect us further from the Federal Voting Rights Act of 1965, which, if the Supreme Court says, you know, was unconstitutional and states have the right to set their own voting rights, you know, act, or, you know, to make their own choices in their state constitution, but that the Supreme Court decides to undo that Federal Voting Rights Act of 1965, we'll be able to say New York went above and beyond our, you know, duty to our residents, and we're making sure that everyone will have access. That also includes making legal action against voter suppression or disenfranchisement or intimidation, like Barb mentioned, giving us a clear path in New York State, you know, the legal system, to say, this was a violation, who do I report it to? And what will you do to investigate it? And what will the outcome be? To give us clear standards on that, so that it's not, you know, I've got to raise the alarm, and then when I stop making calls to the governor's office, or I stop making calls to the attorney general's office, everyone forgets about me and the fact that my vote didn't count, you know, last year. And now I have to go into the next year kind of protecting myself and looking out for my own right to vote, when it should be the responsibility of the state and the local board of elections. That's also going to mean we need to get more money to the Board of Elections and folks like Barb, who are showing up at the polls, to make sure they have the resources and all of the equipment and tools that they need to provide people the access that they need, or the language materials that they need, or the support that folks might need, you know, in other situations. So I'll pass it back to Sandra, but I thank you all so much for having me tonight.
Oh, thank you, Brendan. That you and Barb have done a fabulous job of giving us a lot of information. And I'm really interested in working together on the Monticello or the Sullivan County School Board's elections information, because that's a biggie, you know. And so we'll talk further. But I wanted to open the floor up to questions. One of the questions that I had, since I see no one's hand is up yet, is for the school board elections, when was it is decided in the towns that they will have school board elections? Basically, many of them are in May. My wonder is, why don't they have them during the regular election time?
Yeah. I wouldn't be able to say why they don't have them during the regular election time, but I would imagine it probably became like kind of normalized when local boards of elections were like, no, we need the polls in June sometimes. And that's when school lets out. So it's probably like the idea of like, maybe they did them in the summer at one point, and then the local boards of election were like, we need this for the primary, so you can't use our space, you know, if you need it during that time. So I would imagine it kind of just became standardized after, you know, figuring out we need a certain time of year to have this towards the end of the school year, after kind of, you know, when the when school budgets are about to be voted on and approved, it kind of seems like the right time to collect petitions and submit if you want to, you know, run for a candidacy. So I would imagine that's it. But yeah, again, they have no state oversight, so it's not like, you know, you have to do it this way or that way. There's really not much oversight for that, outside of like, you know, the local school board saying like, this is what we believe is the best route forward.
Thank you.
I agree with Brandon that is absolutely correct. It has to do with when the budget needs to be passed. And then also in terms of like a self-fulfilling, you know, tail wagging the dog, also the terms are based now about that.
I think I'm double speaking.
Thank you, Barbara. And thank you, Brandon. You both have brought a wealth of information. And thank you for our audience that's at the library. This has been great, and we appreciate you.
And that concludes this series here on the Local Edition. We've been bringing you these workshops broken up into installments over the last few weeks. Remember, New York's primary day is next Tuesday. That's the 28th. And tomorrow, the Local Edition will be back. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned. We got our great lineup of news and politics talk coming up right here on Radio Catskill, starting with La Voce en Breve.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello.
Meet the legendary Gudrid the Far Traveler.
She straddled the pagan world, the Christian world. She was renowned for her goodness and wisdom.
Pick your favorite town in the Netherlands.
Art is so alive in that city. There's statues everywhere, a lot of great little galleries.
And find a warm welcome in Nicaragua.
People can have a real takeaway when they come to Nicaragua.
On the next Travel with Rick.